Life's full of questions, isn't it? Will Brexit ever happen? Who's going to win Strictly? Will Ant and Dec ever present I'm a Celebrity ever again together? And from yesterday's rugby field, how come in the day of TMO and video that Owen Farrell didn't get a red card for the second week in a row? It's a rather niche reference to yesterday's game. For the past few months, we've been looking at the first 11 chapters of Genesis, and they raise the big questions of life that we all face. And from it, God has given us big answers to these big questions. And as we finish off our series in Genesis today, looking at the life of Abraham, I thought it would be good to recap some of the big questions of life and what God has taught us about these from his word. So we begin with, what kind of world is this that we live in, that we inhabit? And we're told by Genesis that this world isn't just doesn't happen to be. It's a creation. It's created by a personal God, a world created with a purpose so that our lives in this world can also have purpose. We discover it is a very good creation because it's the product and the creation of a very good God. We discover, in fact, that the whole of creation, the whole of cosmos, has been built by God like a temple, a place where we can live with God and for God and worship God. But what kind of God is this that has made this world and has made us? We discover that this is a God who is in control of all things. And he's a God who delights to give us life and to bless our lives. The reason that our world is a life, a world of life and of blessing is because the God who made it is a God of life and blessing. This is a God who is committed to his creation and committed to each of us, even though we keep wandering away from him. God is intimately involved in this world, in this creation. But who are we? What does it mean to be human? Well, we are created by God, male and female, in the image of God. The idea is that we are to reflect who God is in everything we say and do and think to the world around us. God has created us to reflect who he is and to be in relationship with him. And God gives us this purpose in life to be kings and queens, to rule over this world, to use the gifts, the creativity, the power that we have, to order this world in the wonderful way that we do through technology and progress and all the things that God has given. And God has also made us to be priests. We are to tend and keep this garden paradise. Everything we do is to be an act of worship reflecting who this God is. That's who we are. But what's gone wrong with this world? Because anyone that's lived in this world for any length of time will realize that, yes, there is life and blessing, but there are so many things that have gone wrong. Is this the way it's supposed to be? What has gone wrong? And the Bible tells us that what has gone wrong is that we as humans have turned away from God. And when you turn away from the God who is the source of all life and all blessing, life's going to be damaged. And our relationship with God is damaged. Our relationship with one another is damaged. Our relationship with the world around us, of creation, is fundamentally damaged. Our relationship with ourselves is damaged. But if all of that's happened, what is God doing in this world? What's he up to? Well, God is working in the midst of that brokenness, still pouring out his life and his blessing. And he is seeking to draw us back into relationship with him. Because if God can restore that broken relationship between him and us, then he can begin to restore all the other brokenness, our broken relationship with one another, with our creation, with ourselves. God is on a mission in the world from the very beginning to take the broken places in your life and mine, the broken places of this world, and make them new. All that is broken and spoiled, God is going to make new and renew. That's the big picture of these first 11 chapters of Genesis. And that's the first part of Genesis. And last week we finished off at the Tower of Babel with a view of nations. It's a global perspective. And now we move from that perspective now to Abraham, this guy, this family in what is now modern day Iraq. And we begin to discover how God is going to take that big plan of what he's doing in the world, and he's going to work it out through one particular family. And he's going to work in this family to bless all peoples on earth. And I want to look at this passage that Naomi has read to us this morning under three headings, and to say three things in particular. I want to say that God meets with us in the midst of our losses and longing in life, and works in them to bring us hope. And I want to read from this passage and show how God speaks into our lives, and how when he makes promises to us, it transforms our life and our circumstances. And then we want to look at the journey that God calls each one of us on, a journey of obedience and worship. Let's begin then with loss and longing. We maybe picked it up in the reading as we began to read about Terah and his son Abram and his family. Things are not going well for them. And as we pick up this story in Genesis so often, we see that the blessing and the fruitfulness that God has commanded seems to be being interrupted. There's things going wrong. Because Abram's father, Terah, we read in verse 26 of chapter 11, has to wait till he's 70 to have children. If you look back in the previous verses, all his ancestors had kids when they were about 30. It's a foretaste of the pain that's going to be in the midst of Abram and Sarah's life. Terah does eventually have three sons, but then tragically, he loses a son very young and is left to raise the grandkids himself. For Abram and Sarah, there's also great sadness. The text is bleak in its assessment in verse 30. Now, Sarah was barren. She had no children. This is a family marked by loss and by longing. Tragic circumstances, difficulties, things that they longed for, such a human experience of a life full of life and blessing. And then these things are going wrong, and we're thinking, what's going on in life? And then there's this glimmer of hope as Terah moves west, as he decides to move from Babylon and heads towards Canaan, heading away from modern-day Iraq. However, they only make it halfway, and when they come to Haran, they settle down, and having settled down, Terah just dies. And we're left to ask, where's the blessing of God that God speaks about in a family that experiences such tragedy? Where's the fruitfulness in a family that's struggling to have kids? And where's God in the midst of all of this? When we read this line of families and this litany of loss and longing, God isn't even mentioned. What on earth is he up to? And what is he doing in the midst of loss and longing? These are the questions we're supposed to ask as we read this text. Yet it's here, in this particular family, in the midst of these unpromising and seemingly hopeless and impossible circumstances of loss and of longing, that God turns up. And when God turns up, he takes the place of loss and longing, and he turns it into a place of hope. A place that looks like a dead end is suddenly transformed into a new beginning. That's what God does when he shows up in our lives. And the great encouragement for us, of course, in whatever we are facing and whatever's going on in our lives, is that God is still the same today. In the midst of our losses, which we're experiencing daily, in the midst of the things that we long for and hope for, and in the midst of the night we weep for, God turns up. God turns up. And when he comes, there is always hope. Our circumstances this morning may be less than ideal, folks, but God meets us where we are. He doesn't say, get yourself over here and then I'll sort you out. He doesn't come to us and saying, oh, Adrian, if only you come to me earlier, I could have done something about it, but now, son, you're on your own. No, he meets us where we are. In the midst of our loss and longing, when things are going badly wrong or when things are going well, he meets us there, and that's where he works. Right where we are, whatever we are facing and going through, that's where God is. And whatever facing this morning, however hopeless, however dark, however difficult, however much of a dead end life seems for us this morning, new beginnings are always possible from here, where you and I are. Why? Because despite our losses and despite our longings, God shows up. And when God shows up, there's always hope. I know, as a church family, that we have experienced losses in our lives and longings. Some of us here know the pain in our families of losing a child. Some of us as children know what it's like to lose a parent. Some of us know what it's like to lose a sibling. Some of us today are grieving the losses of employment, the losses of health, both physical and mental, the losses of economics. The sums haven't worked out quite as we'd hoped that they would. The losses of hopes and dreams. Our lives are marked by these losses, are they not? And we mourn them. And our lives are marked by longings. Some of us long for a work situation to change. I was speaking to someone this morning who's in the midst of that change, and God has wonderfully answered their prayers to bring them into a place of hope. How good it is when God does that. But for some of us, work's tough. For some of us, it's the relationships we've lost and the relationships that are broken, and we're longing for change in these relationships. Or things in our family that are so hard to deal with, whether it's dealing with our kids or, as life goes on, as kids, you're dealing with your parents. The things you long for, the changes that you hope are going to happen. Some of us here are single, and we're longing for someone to share that journey with us, and it breaks our heart. And some of us are facing exactly what Abram and Sarah faced. We won't have kids. We can't. These are real losses, real longings, and they mark us. But folks, they don't need to define us. For in Abram's story and in our story, in the midst of the losses we experience and the longings that ache in our heart, these things need not define us. Why? Because God is a God of life and of blessing. And if we allow him, it's the activity of God and God showing up in our life that'll make the difference and can take places of loss and of longing and turn them into places of hope, loss, and longing. But secondly, God's promises transform life. Into this context, into loss and longing, into the tragedy of these family circumstances and the difficulties of them, God shows up and God speaks. You know, so often if we're familiar with reading the Bible and certain things just turn up all the time, they become over-familiar. But we need to grasp this morning. Abraham is living among the Babylonians, polytheist. They believed in multiple gods. And suddenly he has a transforming encounter as God shows up in his life and God, the God of the universe, speaks to a human being. God speaks. And as we go through the story and the text, we read in verse 7 that God shows up. God appears to Abraham. God speaks and God appears to a human being. That is an incredible thing. And we should never get tired of reading that, that that's a possibility for us. Because God is not absent. In the midst of our lives of life and blessing, of loss and longing, God is present and wants to be present with us, whatever we are facing today. God is not a distant, far away God. God is near. And God is not silent. God is always speaking if we listen for his voice. God speaks and he commands Abram to go. But alongside this command to go, God gives an astonishing promise in verse 2 and 3 of our passage in chapter 12. And the rest of the Old Testament, the whole of the biblical story, is taken up with how God will fulfill this promise over a period of 2,000 years from when he first speaks to Abraham to when the fulfillment comes with the birth and the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. 2,000 years keeping a promise. And 2,000 years later, God is still fulfilling this promise every time someone turns to God through Jesus Christ. It's an astonishing promise that Abram gets. It's the promise that not only that he and Sarah, who are barren and cannot have kids, that they'll have a family of their own, but that this family is going to grow into a nation. And in contrast to what happened at Babel last week, where people seek significance through their own activity apart from God, there is the promise that God's going to work in Abram's life to make his name great. There's the promise of a land, because of course a nation needs a land. And explicitly in verse 7, we get that promise stated by God when they arrive there. And it's an astonishing picture of God working in the world to send wave after wave after wave of blessing into the world through Abram. Abram's going to be blessed. His name will be a blessing. All who bless Abram will be blessed. And in fact, all peoples on earth will be blessed. These ever-increasing waves of blessing out into the world. And God lays out his plan as he makes this promise to Abram. In a world in Genesis where we're reading about the nations and the people spreading out around the world, inevitably as they spread out, the things go wrong and the damage they do to one another in creation. God's answer to this is through Abram and the nation that will come from him and from his descendants. God will send an unrelenting torrent, an ever-increasing blessing into the creation, unleashing it through Abram and the nation that will come after him. And all of this is going to depend not on Abram, but on God. Six times in these two verses, God says, I will, I will, I will. This doesn't depend upon Abram's ability to do anything but to trust and believe in what God says. Verse 7, we get another I will when he's talking about the land. God is the one who promises to act in our lives if we'll get out of the way and let him to work, rather than depending upon our own meager resources to battle through life as if it all depends upon us. God makes promises and binds himself to humanity, and God commits himself through this promise to Abraham to bless and not to curse humanity. God's promise to Abraham finds its ultimate fulfillment in Abraham's great descendant, Jesus of Nazareth. And we've been thinking about that. How is it possible for God to do these two diametrically opposed things? How is it possible that God is going to deal with our disobedience and our turning away and all the damage that does to all of us and all of creation? How is God going to deal with that and bring the justice that we need for all the wrong in the world and all the wrong that we're involved in? How is he going to do that while at the same time promising a blessing for all nations, promising to restore relationship with him, draw us back into relationship with himself, forgive us and heal us and make us whole? How can he do those two things? And the answer is Jesus. On the cross, God pours out his perfect justice and punishes it all, deals with it all. How? He sends his own son to die for the sins of the world. What a God we have. And in that act, a great invitation to every human being to come back to him, to know forgiveness, to know healing, to know restoration, to no renewal. That's how God's going to do it. And that's where this promise ends up. How can God bless all nations when all nations in every single part turn away from him? The answer is he'll fulfill it in Jesus. And he works towards that over 2,000 years. That is astonishing. God is not absent in the midst of our lives of life and blessing, of loss and longing. God is present with us. God is not distant, but he is near. And God is not silent in what you and I face this morning, but God is speaking. The heart of life is not what we can do, not even what we can do for God, but what God promises through his grace and his kindness to do for us through Jesus. Life does not depend upon us, though we work and live as though it does. Life depends upon God. We cannot give ourselves life, nor can we bless ourselves. Only God is the source of life and of blessing. Good gifts from a wonderfully good God. God, through Abraham, promises life and blessing. And when God speaks to Abraham and makes these promises, his life is utterly changed and transformed. And it's the same for us too. Whatever we're facing, whatever we're going through today, God is speaking. And he is speaking his promises of life and of blessing over your circumstances and mine, whatever they are. And if we'll listen to him and allow him, his words and promises will change and transform our life. Loss and longing, when God shows up, loss and longing is changed to hope. God's promises, God speaks, God's promises transform life, whatever our circumstances are. Finally, journeying with God. God's great command here, God's great promise to Abraham here, is an invitation for Abraham to go on a journey with God. And it's a journey in the right direction. It's a journey towards God rather than away from God. It's a journey away from Babylon, where people worship many gods, to go on a journey with the one true God, to set up and establish a nation where the one true God will be worshipped. It's a journey in which Abraham is to allow God's promises and God's power and purposes to be the things that shape his life. It's a move away from the self-sufficiency and the selfish ambition of Babel. And Abram's journey with God in our passage is marked by two things: obedience and worship. God's command is full of risk. Did you see that in verse 1 of chapter 12? Leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. Abram's been called to leave everything behind that he knows, the security of the family group, and go on a journey to an indeterminate destination. How's that for an offer? And yet we read in verse 4, so Abram left, as the Lord told him. Abram obeyed. That's how our places of loss and longing are transformed into places of hope. When we hear God's voice speaking to us, we obey. 17 years ago, almost to the day, I was wrestling with something that God was calling me to do. And these verses are precious to me because they reflect very strongly in their details what I was asked to do. Quite literally, I was asked to leave my father's household. I was still living with mom and dad. I was asked to leave my country. I was asked to give up my career in banking, which I'd worked hard for. I was to give up everything I knew and everything I'd worked for and all the security that that had, and to move to Canada, where I knew nobody, to go to a Bible college for a quite indeterminate future. I can tell you I wrestled over many nights with that, because that's a lot to give up when you're a wee boy that's never moved out of mum and dad's house. I thank God every day that I said yes. I thank God every day that I obeyed. And you'll have your stories if you've been on this journey for a long time, as I've got mine. Those moments when God shows up and says, this is what I want you to do, and it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you. But there's no other way to get on this journey and stay on this journey unless we obey. And if you've got stories like that, you'll know what it's like to be on the other side, to have obeyed God and realize how God opens up life and pours out life and blessing. Why? Just because you did what he asked you to do, even though it was scary and it was hard and it was difficult. And God's calling us all forward, maybe not in such dramatic ways today, but he's asking us all to obey, to move forward with him. Now, at some point on this journey, in verse 5, God must have revealed the destination, because it says they set out for the land of Canaan and they arrived there. And what's the first thing that happens when they arrive? God shows up again. God appears to Abraham in verse 7 and makes the promise of the land. Isn't it good that when we obey God and we go into an indeterminate future, God already meets us in that future? And he encourages us. Often when we take that step of obedience in our lives, God meets with us and says, here I am, just as I promised. I'm still with you. And Abram's response when God shows up is to worship. And then he journeys to the land, goes to Bethel and Ai, just north of where Jerusalem is today. And he worships there too. Everywhere he goes in the land, he worships. God invites each one of us, wherever we are in life, on a journey with him. And it's always a journey that involves moving towards God rather than away from God. It's a journey away from the culture in which we live, in which so many different things are worshipped, to worship and depend upon God alone. It's a journey away from our own power and our own plans and all our own selfish ambition, and instead to lay down our lives to this God and to follow him and alone. And it's a journey of hope. It's a journey where we finally get to live out the life that God intended us to live, a life with God, for God, lived out in the power of God. It's a journey full of risk. We'll leave behind everything we know and the security of it as we place our trust completely in Jesus Christ. But my goodness, is the journey worth it? You never know where you'll end up when you say yes to Jesus. And like Abraham, two things are going to keep us on the path on this journey with him: obedience and worship. When God speaks, we're to listen and we're to obey. And we're to constantly worship this God who speaks to us, who appears to us, this God who directs our journey. We're to turn to this God to direct our lives constantly in every part to him. And we're to call on his name and his name alone. And while everyone else in our culture is calling upon their power and their money and who they are and their status and their cleverness, we call on the name of the Lord, because we know it's only the Lord that can help us. We get in on this journey through Jesus, Abram's great descendant. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Only through Jesus can we be drawn back into relationship with God. Jesus, who died that we might be forgiven, on the cross that we might be brought back into relationship with God. And God's invitation to journey with him through life is open to each and every one of us. So the great question for us this morning, I suppose, is this: are we on that journey? Have we heard God speak to us? And have we responded by putting our faith in him? If we're here this morning in church and we're exploring this and we're wondering what to do, perhaps we have never said yes to Jesus Christ, can I urge you with all my heart to say yes to Jesus, to open your life to him and allow him to come in and change and transform your life? And for those of us who've responded to Jesus Christ and are on this journey, how's the journey going? How's our obedience? Many of us, I suspect, hear God's voice loud and clear in our life. Question is not hearing God. God speaks a lot. Will we obey? Will we say yes to Jesus Christ and everything he's asking for us today? We know in our own lives where that is. Let's not hesitate to say yes. Are we moving in the right direction? Are we heading towards God? Some of us perhaps today are stuck. We were moving along and then suddenly life just grinds us down and we're stuck in the mud. and we're not moving forward. We need to get moving forward in the life of faith by obedience and worship. And some of us perhaps are stuck in the mud this morning and thinking, this is rubbish. Maybe life is better back here before I said yes to Jesus. Listen, if that's where you are, turn around, look to the Lord and run to him. It is in God alone that we know life and blessing. That's the journey that God calls us upon. Loss and longing. Abram's story doesn't start in the most promising place. But God turns his place of loss and of longing into a place of hope and new beginnings. And God today wants to do that for each one of us. No matter what our losses are, no matter how deep the longings of our heart is, God meets us where we are. And it's because God is in our lives and God is present that our places of loss and longing can be transformed into places of hope. God speaks to us wherever we are today. And God speaking, God's word always makes a difference. He shaped the world by speaking, and the world is changing. It happens still today. And God comes to us and makes promises to us. He binds himself to us, longing to bless us and draw us back into relationship with himself. Because God speaks, life is always full of hope. Because God's speaking and God's promises always transform life. Difficult and impossible circumstances, God speaks into them and transforms them. Finally, journeying with God. This is what life's about. This is what we are made for. To journey with God in obedience and worship. This creation is full of life and of blessing. That's the story of Genesis. Why? Because our God is God of life and of blessing, of blessing. Despite all that's gone wrong in the world, despite all that's going wrong in our lives even today, there is hope. Why? Because of God. Because he is present. Because he comes to us. Because he speaks to us words of life and of blessing. And he comes to transform our lives. He comes to draw us back to himself and take all the broken places of your life and mine and make them new. A new beginning, a new creation made possible by God through Jesus Christ. Whatever our losses and longing today, who doesn't long for a new beginning? God is calling us back to himself this morning. Let's say yes to Jesus Christ. Wherever we are on the journey, and let's turn our hearts and our lives towards him in worship, this wonderful God who gives us life and gives us blessing. Amen.